Welcome back to The Frontier. I'm your host, James Rockwood, here with Rob Cernkovic and Bonkana Maiga, who's a portfolio manager and managing director at Manulife Investment Management. Bonkana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, James, for having me. My pleasure.
I'd like to start at the beginning. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, how you got started?
No, absolutely. My name is Bonkana Maiga. I'm a portfolio manager with Manulife Investment Management. Co-lead of passive strategies within a systematic equity team. That's about 80 portfolios, tracking indexes around the world, $56 billion of asset under management. Mm. We also manage a suite of factor-based ETFs. I'm part of the team that manages those ETFs. But a little bit about myself, I was raised by parents from academia. My late father was the dean of the engineering school of Mali. Mm-hmm. My mom was a French and history teacher. And I always felt more comfortable with numbers. So after high school, I went to France and I did a program in applied mathematics to social sciences. So 2 years into the program, I found that I was not as bright as my late father, and switched, and I went to finance. So I went to New York City, and I did my undergrad in finance and investments. In 2004, I had a great opportunity to join Goldman Sachs in our investment banking division. Mm. So that was really my entry point in the industry, working as a business analyst, supporting investment bankers in the TMT, which was technology, media, and telecommunication. I spent a bit of time in the Global Natural Resources Group as well. But working alongside some of the greatest minds in the industry was really a good starting of my career, a good way to start it. 2008 was not a pleasant time to be in the industry. So yeah. I had to think about the next step, and the next one for me was to pursue my MBA. So I came here in Toronto and did my MBA at the Reitman School of Management, mm-hmm. and joined Manulife in 2010. Did various roles and joined the systematic team since 2014. So it's been a pleasant ride. But one thing that I will just say is to get where I am today, it takes a lot of hard work, perseverance, and your cultural values, right? You know, what your parent, you know, taught you. And I will say the unconditional love of those around you, right? And on just that note, you know, outside of Manulife, I'm kept quite busy with my family. I'm raising 4 kids between the age of 7 and 14.
Wow.
And I got into biking recently, and my wife thinks that it's a way for me to get away from the chaos at home. So that's a little bit about myself, and I'm very happy to be here. You know, thank you.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm really glad to meet you and to be able to hang out today. So I've got two questions. One is, was there any path outside of numbers that potentially interested you, or did you know that like that was it?
So the good thing about it is when you in a quantitative field like math, you tend to feel more comfortable with finance as well. Okay, I was not a hardcore mathematician as my father was. But I knew that I could apply some of those skill sets into something that was a bit quantitative oriented. So to me, it was an easy transition, if you will. It is not as if I was moving from being a philosopher into a scientist, if you will. It's really how you adapt to situations and just finding your way along the way until you hit something that you feel comfortable with. And I think I believe that I'm on that at that level.
So I'm so excited to talk, but I really want to talk dividends and income strategy, but I do have another question. So when you made the transition from France to New York City, you've got a father from academia and mathematics, but then you also talked about like love and support. So was it a difficult transition to say, hey, I'm leaving mathematics to go do finance and business, or what was that like?
Again, I think I lived in many cultures,
and
being able to adapt to changes is something that I'm proud of, if you will. To me, it was not such a difficult transition. My sister, as a matter of fact, was studying at Columbia University at the time. And she convinced me to say, hey, why don't you come here and why don't you try to make it happen here? So that was, my family around me was very helpful. My wife as well. So the transition was very smooth.
Smooth. That's good. That's good. Okay. Well, we'll get in a little bit into dividends and income strategies. So maybe for some of the listeners that don't know what a dividend is, can you give us a baseline?
Very good question. A dividend is a payment made by a corporation to the owners of the business. When you buy a stock, you are technically an owner of the business. So if the corporation decides to return a portion of their earnings back to their owners, it could be in a form of cash, it could be in a form of dividend, that's what a dividend is, okay? The typical timeline for a dividend is the board of director will declare. So you will have a declaration date. You will also have a payment date. That is when those checks will be mailed to you. There is also what is called the record date. That is when the corporation is going to just look and tally up all the orders on record. And there's the X date, which is two business days before the record date. The X date is important because it is when you can, it's the day when the stock starts trading, excluding the rights or the entitlement to those dividends. If you buy it before the X date, you can get it. If you buy it on the X date or after the X date, you will not get entitled to the dividend. And there's a little technical adjustment that occurs overnight is the stock price will typically drop by the dividend payment, okay? But in a nutshell, dividend is just a way to return wealth back to the owners of the business.
And for you, I'm going to ask two questions. So why dividends for you? Like what is interesting for you? You probably had a lot of different opportunities, but you chose dividends and income strategy. So I'd love to know that. And then I'd also love to know for investors and advisors, you know, why dividends for them as well?
Very good question. And a few points. If you look at the historical returns, okay, and let's pick the United States as an example, and you go all the way back to the 1900 to the end of last year, the total return for the S&P 500 on an annualized basis was around 10%, okay? Out of those 10%, 45% came from dividend and the reinvestment of those dividends. So the contribution of dividends to your total return equation is quite substantial. So it is something that you really have to bear in mind. The other observation is when you look at different decades and when the market is in single-digit return environment, you can pick the 1930s or you can pick the 1970s or the 2000s. When the market is in stress or when there's a recession or when there's inflation, the contribution of your dividend is even greater. So it gives you that protection in down or uncertain times, which is quite important for many investors and advisors. Okay. The second thing that I will say is there could be also an inflation hedge. So we've done some analysis, and again, picking the U.S. Market as an example, going back to 1991, and if you look at how a quality dividend strategy performed when the CPI, which is the Consumer Price Index, fluctuates year over year within certain ranges, and you look at the next 12-month return of a quality dividend strategy or just the broader market, so when the CPI is above 4%, okay, the average return for the next 12 months will be roughly negative 3% for a dividend strategy. But for the overall market, it will be about 10%, down 10%. So you get that protection in down market. That's a given. But here's the interesting thing. There's a sweet range, I would say, when the CPI is between 3 and 4%, a dividend strategy on average over the next 12 months gives you 15% return compared to 7% for the broader market. So you can argue that we are in an environment where central banks will be very reluctant to cut interest rates aggressively, and we may be in that range. And dividend strategies tend to do quite well in those environments. So in summary, you have the inflation hedge ability, which is very important, especially in this environment, because inflation remains a problem. And you also have the ability to get protection from a dividend strategy. So I think those are compelling arguments for anyone interested in dividends.
Yeah, and those points are counter to some of the assumptions that I would have, like dividends are for retirement. It almost, you describe it as it's almost an active strategy right now.
Because sometimes there's a perception that dividend investing is just about the dividend that you're getting.
Right.
But the other side of the equation, just as I described, you have a potential price appreciation, right? But for the most part, someone who's retiring or someone who's looking for a stable stream of cash flows would be focusing more on the stability of those cash flows. It would be mostly on the income part of the total return equation. But what is important when you're even comparing a dividend stock to, let's say, a fixed income stock is that capital appreciation is still part of your total return equation.
Sure.
So you can still gain something from it,
yep. Right?
Even though you have a stable cash flows, predictable cash flows coming from those dividend clips.
Do you see them as a middle ground between fixed income and equity? Are they more heavily on the equity side? Like how would, as an advisor is looking in particular to explain the benefit of a dividend or an income producer to a dividend paying portfolio or strategy within a portfolio, what's the easiest way for them to describe that?
There are two different asset classes, okay? A fixed income typically will have the price risk, which is the fluctuation of that security when interest rates go up. So there's an inverse relationship between the two. The second thing is the reinvestment risk, because a fixed income gives you coupons. If you buy a 10-year bond, you will have for the next 20 periods a steady payment. But it is assumed that you're reinvesting those coupons into the same yield that you got initially. So the return that you get from a fixed income is less volatile than what you could get on an equity. But on the other side, if you buy a dividend stock, you will have both the income stream and you will also have the capital appreciation that comes along with it. And that portion can be substantial at times and can be low at times. But on overall, you have, I would say, a greater upside potential by buying a dividend stock as opposed to just a fixed income product.
That's really interesting. I think it's a really good way and a succinct way for advisors in particular to explain the benefit of that in sitting, how it can sit inside of a portfolio. While it might be a bit of a hedge for some equity risk, it's going to behave slightly different from fixed income. And I think that's a really helpful summary. I know you're really well versed in dividends. You manage, you know, dividend based funds and pretty huge mandates for Manulife. Can we talk a bit about the construction of a dividend fund? Is it, you know, are we getting into sort of just general paying? Are there enough that they're going to have Canadian, US focus? Like, I'd love to get a bit more of a discussion around how do you construct and manage those?
Sure. I think a lot of research goes into it, first and foremost. Not all dividend strategies are created equal. They typically come in two flavors. You will have a high dividend strategy that's basically screening for dividend-paying stocks and selecting the top-yielding names. You can also have dividend growers. Those will be companies that have consistently grown their dividend over, let's say, 10 years, over 20 years. So the two will typically have a different risk and return profile. High dividend will typically be concentrated in dividend-paying sectors, such as utilities, financials, and energies. On the other side, a dividend grower will select the best, the high quality names within every single sector that's available, okay? And if you look at the return, going all the way back to the 1990s again, the S&P 500 dividend grower return on average, I would say close to 10%. A high dividend will have returned about 8.7% and a broader market 6.6. So growers tend to do better. And the reason for that is they have less volatility, or they provide better drawdown when the market tanks. And 2020 was a perfect example when the S&P 500 high dividend declined more than the dividend growers. So you have to be aware of those nuances when you construct a dividend strategy, okay? The way we go about it is pretty much a two-step process. We want to first screen for high-quality dividend payers, okay? And there's a concept that we use, which is to tell, are you paying too much off your earnings or are you keeping enough to grow your business going forward? So you look at a dividend payout ratio. You want to just make sure that you're paying sufficiently high, but you're not impeding your business ability to grow the business, okay? You will also look at quality. You can have different ways of defining quality because quality is a well-sought factor, especially in this environment. So you screen for those high quality dividend paying names, and then you can use an optimizer to find the optimal portfolio that you're looking for. So a lot goes into constructing those strategies. And if you look at a US dividend versus a Canadian dividend, well, you have to think about the makeup of those markets. So in Canada, energy and financials make up 47% of the TSX composite. In the US, barely 16%, okay? Mm-hmm. So by default, you're gonna have quite a bit of a tilt towards high dividend, and the yield on the TSX composite is higher than the yield on the S&P 500. The yield advantage is about 167 basis points, okay? So by the nature of the market, you will tend to have better yield in the Canadian, but it will be more concentrated within certain sectors. So you have to be aware of those nuances and those differences when you're looking at a US dividend versus a Canadian dividend ETF.
Is it fair to assume that dividend paying stocks represent a certain level of maturity of the business? You know, if you think early stage companies tend to reinvest all of their profits to continue to grow, do firms have to reach a certain level of growth or maturity to be able to transition to start to pay dividends? Are people paying dividends at any stage? Like, I'd love to get a bit of a discussion around that.
That is a very good question. Think of the Apples, the Microsoft of the days, and they didn't pay dividend because there was a need to reinvest every single penny back into the business. And there was a dire need to reinvest every single dollar that you were making. So to your point, there is a stage in the life cycle of a business when they will project to the market that, yes, we have reached that maturity. We believe that we can have a stable dividend policy, and we're going to be really keeping that policy. Because one thing that the market doesn't like is when you cut dividends, right? You and I get used to getting those nice dividend payment, and suddenly for XYZ reasons, they stop. There were many studies showing that dividend cutters have been more punished than dividend initiators or dividend growers over time. So the last thing that a company want to do is to cut dividends after starting them. So to your point, you're projecting confidence, you're projecting maturity, and that you're really able to maintain those dividend payments for the foreseeable future.
On that component of cutting dividends, does that mean that, like, do dividends typically follow the same cycles as equity markets, or are they lagging behind? Are they more muted? You know, when markets go down and they're in the tank, are dividends similarly cutting, or are they not cutting quite as much? Like, I'd love to get your take on that.
They will resist as much as possible to cut them. Yeah. Yeah, very good question, because I was having a conversation with one of our portfolio managers on the equity side. And we have the recent bout of volatility with regional banks. And I was trying to know, is that impacting their payment, their dividend policy? And you know, the response was they are not seeing any cracks yet. And we haven't seen those on the numbers. So typically, any corporation will avoid cutting dividend and try to do everything possible not to go down that path.
No, that's awesome. That's a really cool element. I think is an easy to articulate sort of component or value prop for investors when an advisor is explaining, you know, why they should add it into a portfolio. Back to the Canadian-US question, you mentioned Canada has a tilt towards specific sectors. Does that mean that if you have a dividend or you want to have a dividend paying component of a portfolio, you probably need to pair US and Canada or be slightly heavier on the US to get broader diversification? Or how do you think about that?
You just hit it. Diversification is key. We have a product, it's a smart bundle that actually mixes, combines CDIV, UDIV, and CBND. And that's a way for you to get diversification. Okay? You get yield diversification, but you also get diversification by having exposure to different markets. So I think diversification is key. And combining a U.S. dividend ETF and a U.S.-focused dividend ETF with a Canadian one, or an event, if you can even throw the international to the mix, could be a good way for you to get a diversified exposure to that space.
That's really interesting. And so talking about that, and you spoke a little bit about some of the Manulife funds you manage. You manage a number of funds. So Manulife Smart Dividend ETF, Manulife Smart U.S. Dividend ETF Hedged, and they're both coming up to the three-year mark, which we love to cover on the frontier. Why is this significant? And can you talk a little bit about those two products?
Sure. It is highly significant from our perspective. A few years ago, the product team came and I had an idea about really constructing something that was unique, that was special. We had the help of our chief strategist at the time. And we worked together tirelessly with the product team. And we launched back in 2020 the first internally managed ETF in Manulife's history. Okay. So reaching that three-year milestone, it is pretty significant from our side. There's been a lot of work, people stepping up to the plate where they could, and a lot of research, backtesting, meetings, and in the end, it's been a successful suite of ETF. If I can just give a couple of metrics. In less than 3 years, CDIV, UDIV, because we also have the unhedged version, so we have a hedge and unhedged, those two alone are very close to $600 million in asset under management, and mostly from retail flows. So there is a momentum, and year to date, we're seeing, still seeing positive flows despite the rise in AI-driven technology, stocks and so forth. So the momentum is still positive on the numbers side. So we're quite happy, and it's really a milestone to reach that 3 year level.
What's driving the success? Is it a renewed understanding of dividends? Is it the market? Like what's driving folks and that success in those funds?
I think the story is critical.
Right.
I'll tell you a little story. A few months ago, one of our advisors, or seller, came to me and said, oh, there's a potential client, is really interested into your product. And I was all excited and I went to check the performance and so forth. And yes, the performance was better than the competitor. So the competitor was switching into one of our ETF. And he was tapping on me and I said, hey, I don't sell performance to my clients. I sell them a story. Mm-hmm. And that really hit me because I think it's critically important for you to make sure that your client and advisors alike understand what they're buying into, okay? If you sell them a story, they can feel comfortable. They can stay in it for the long run because I know at least they know the risk and return reward profile. When the market goes down, they will not necessarily pull the money out right away. So being able to really tell your story is very critical. Okay, performance is important, but I would say the story is even more so.
And then just on that, this part's kind of fascinating to me too, is how do you tell that story? Is it... Do you spend a lot of time with wholesalers? Do you spend a lot of time with advisors? Like, how are you enabling your story to get to retail investors?
There's a continuous feedback loop,
sure,
if you will. The performance is easier,
yeah,
but the product team is also part of the conversation. Okay. All sellers are part of the conversation. Yep. And they want to know what is unique about your value proposition, how you go about creating your strategies, okay? And again, you know, we have a very unique two-step process that looks at quality dividend names. Mm-hmm. We use an optimizer, and we have an objective function with constraints. So we try to come up with something that gives comfort to the wholesale team.
Sure.
In terms of here's what you have when yep. you look when you buy CDV, here's what you get when you buy UDV, and here's what you get when you buy GHDV, for example. So it's a constant education, a constant conversation, and making sure that we all understand the product. And then their feedback also help us improve the product, yeah. mm-hmm. right? Because in the end, it's a very dynamic industry, and you have to be able to capture those structural changes when they occur.
So you've got the 3-year mark. That means you built these in 2020. How was that? Can you talk us a little bit through how to get a fund built during a pandemic?
2020 was a tough year. COVID-19 was very difficult, but from a business or an investment standpoint, it was at a time when value as a factor was doing well. And a dividend strategy by nature tend to have a value tilt. They have lower price to book and PEs than the overall market. And we launched CDIV and UDIV, I would say at a perfect time when those factors did quite well, okay? So the timing helps. It was a tough year, but I think if you have a vision, and if you can implement that vision with the help of the right people within the organization, which is exactly what happened, you can find yourself where we're finding ourselves today.
Just kind of going back to the growth of those funds, where do you see a lot of that inflow coming from? Is it a growing retirement population? Is it coming from advisors just understanding the story and it's starting to click? Where are you seeing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's mostly from retail, but within a retail space, I would say, you know, we used to say a few years ago, we are, you know, low for long interest rate environment to make kind of the case for dividend investing products.
Sure.
Now we are in higher for longer interest rate environment. So the demand is still there despite, the changing dynamics in the marketplace. Okay. A retiree who's looking for stable income would be interested in those products. And we've seen retail money getting into or ETFs. You can also be an asset manager, an asset allocator, who is, if you take a target date fund, which is a strategy that de-risk over time as you get closer to retirement, you can dial up your exposure to those dividend ETF if you're looking to mitigate the risk that the retiree will outlive his or her resources. So there are different investors buying those products. Could be, again, someone who's retiring, but it doesn't have to be. I personally invest in those dividend ETF because, mm-hmm. again, put things into perspective. Over the last 15 years, we've seen growth taking off, and the contribution from dividend has gone down from what we've seen before, 45%, to something around 20%, right? So if we are returning to a long-term average, so the outlook for those dividend strategies is pretty bright, okay? So you can be a retiree, you can be an asset manager, you can be typical everyday investors looking to have exposure to dividend, but also having the price appreciation doing its part in your total return. So I think it's available to anyone who has the proper, I wouldn't say the proper, who has the risk profile that fits those products.
I'm really interested in the proliferation of access to private markets, particularly with asset managers finding ways to provide access to investing in or benefiting from private companies. Do you see a future with private companies and dividend portfolios? Is that one way or an avenue that could potentially be explored as people continue to try to provide access to markets? Like private credit's been blowing up. You've got hedge funds. You've got now firms investing in private equity firms and some of these. Bit of a flyer, but I'd love to get your take on the future of dividends in private markets.
Oh, the future of dividend in private market, and I wouldn't really separate it from the rest of the market, okay? Because again, the outlook to me is promising. Like we've seen some of those numbers, and returning to a long run average will really make the case for those that are adopting the importance of dividend. One thing that I will just say is we have seen product teams really coming with ideas on how do you use those dividend strategies. And, I mentioned the bundle ETF. You can even expand beyond that, right? We have also an international dividend ETF that goes beyond North America. So having a global perspective, but again, I will say, you have a product that has specific features, and you look at the empirical evidence. It is really backing those. I will say the positive side of them. Right, there's negative, but I think it's a package. And if you look at the entire package, I think there's a way for any investors, whether it's on a private market side, on a public market side, on a retail side, to get on board with dividend strategies.
And that's why I said it was a flyer.
You got me on that one. So I'm going to go home and just, jumps really.
We asked the tough questions here on the frontier. Okay, awesome. If you could sum up three things that a listener should take away in terms of dividend and income strategies from this discussion, what would they be?
Sure. Number one, I would say dividends are important. We looked at the empirical evidence. So if you have a long-term view, keep in mind that a good portion of your return will come from dividend. So that's number one. Number two, I would say do your homework. You have different ways of creating dividend strategies, and you want to make sure that you know what you're buying, right? Look under the hood and make sure that you're buying something that matches your risk profile. The last thing that I will say is getting the proper information, and Cap Intel is doing a great job in really providing Canadian with valuable insights. Again, do your homework and gather as much information. I will say independent information from organization as yours. So that's what I will pretty much say.
I'll tell you what, this has kind of like been my homework. So I've learned a lot. I really appreciate you, and thanks for coming on. See you on the frontier.